Welcome to the Snowfighters Institute podcast, featuring conversations with leaders in professional snow and ice management about what's working, what's challenging, and what matters most in our industry. Here's your host, Phil Harwood.
Welcome back, Snowfighters. My name is Phil Harwood. I am the snow commander of the Snowfighters Institute, among other things. I am very pleased today to be joined by Jason Kane from Midwest Salt. Thank you for being our special guest today, Jason.
Hey, Phil, thanks for having me. Really appreciate you taking the time here and to get me out here for you.
Absolutely. So for one of our listeners that might not have heard of Midwest Salt before, just tell us a little bit about your company. What's, you know, give us some brief history, like what are you guys all about? Where are you located? What's your role in the company? That type of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Midwest Salt's been around for more than 30 years under the current owner, Tony Johnson. Since 2008, 2009 is when he acquired the company. And he came from a logistics background. And so everything that he's done in his past leading up to this was connecting dots, right? Hub and spoke, figuring out how to get material to places from places. So literally, Midwest Salt is a logistics company, like a lot of other service providers. So when he saw that opportunity to acquire a company that was in his background, he took advantage of it. So when he acquired the company, we were a smaller mom and pop shop that was delivering bags of salt into people's houses and basements, salt to water softener tanks,
okay,
things of that nature. So I joined the team in late 2010. Mm-hmm. And I responded to a Craigslist ad when we moved to Colorado. So they brought me in. I looked at it as a part-time job to get my, you know, feet in the industry in Illinois. And from that point on, you know, I just grew with the company. So it went from managing the warehouse, stock keeping, getting on the trucks to go on routes. And then that evolved into getting into an office position, a sales position, after I had been truck driving and doing a lot of the heavy lifting, literally, over the first 2 years of my time with Midwest Salt.
Okay. All right, great. And your current role is what?
Right now, I am the national sales manager for Midwest Salt. Prior to that, I had some time in 2012-13. I got an opportunity to go into a skydiving and be the operations manager and customer service manager for a skydiving company here in Illinois.
Oh, wow.
And because of that, I would spend my summers with skydiving, and then I would go back to Midwest Salt and drive truck. So for 4 winters, I was just going back to drive semis, deliver pallets, deliver bulk loads, and help out Midwest Salt at that time. So Tony was gracious enough to say, hey, no matter what it takes, we want you back on the team. And so in 2016, my wife and I started growing our family. And she said, I think it's time that we talk to Tony again and see if we can go back there full time.
Sure.
So with kids in the mix, skydiving kind of had to take a back seat a little bit more. And Tony welcomed me back to the team as being on the sales team full time since 2016 to current. So
okay. Yeah, it's always really interesting to hear how people got in the industry and what their perception of the industry was before they got into it. I hear a lot of people say, I used to love snow before I got into the industry, and then I went through a time period where I couldn't stand it. Now I love it again. So there's an evolution. I meet so many people who are very passionate about snow and ice management, but you know, they maybe weren't always that way. But you come to appreciate what you do if you do it well, and if you, you know, understand the implication of it, like how important it is to society, for example. But no, the skydiving background is super interesting. How did you get into that?
That was because of my wife.
Okay.
She introduced me to people that were doing it back in Colorado when we lived out there. She had learned how to skydive in Hawaii when she was a travel nurse. So because of that, we've lived a lot of places.
Okay.
And when we got into skydiving itself, my role was more so entwined with being in the customer service role. And I think it comes from my background originally was my parents owned a couple small companies, but it was everything was customer service focused. So it was, how do we make sure that we're taking care of the people? And in skydiving, it was literally with their lives, right? So it's, we need to make sure our planes are, you know, at the tip-top mechanical condition. Our gear is the best gear that we can offer to anybody in the industry. We have the best tandem instructors, basically starting from the foundation and working up to make sure that you're taking care of every person that comes through those doors.
Right.
So that relates to going into the roles that I think all of us kind of are in, which is we're all doing something. We may be selling a service or selling something in our line of work, but we're really taking care of people. Mm-hmm. And with what I do to help supply the frontline workers of snow fighting industry, if they don't have the materials that I can supply, they're not taking care of their people, right? Mm-hmm. Trickle down, very simple, but it's really customer service that runs everything. No matter who you're with, what company you work for, if you can put out an exceptional customer service called model, mm-hmm. I think you're going to do extremely well in any industry. And I think that's, I mean, we're all living in that world now, and there seems to be a breakdown of customer mm-hmm. service that starting to get a revival. People are starting to see the value.
I agree. It's coming back. Yeah. But no, you see it all everywhere you go, every restaurant, every hotel, airports, no matter what you do, renting a car. Like, there's so many examples of really great customer service where those companies are just thriving because they've made the investment. They've, in some cases, gamified customer service, which I think is super cool. Probably really hard to do for a lot of companies, but companies who are investing in customer service, one of the things I always notice is there's a feedback loop. They're always asking for feedback from their customers. They want, you know, you always get a survey. You always get, there's always a, you know, one of those green, yellow, red smiley buttons somewhere. Like, there's always a way to get feedback. And then I see all these companies that just provide terrible customer service. There's never a chance to give any feedback. It's almost like they don't want to hear it. In fact, you have to go digging to try to find a place. If you really want to give them some input, they don't make it easy for you. You have to go looking for a way to do it, and then you never get a response. So it really is kind of a black hole. It's really, really kind of fascinating to me when you look at the business models. So I love hearing about this. And in my mind, I'm trying to make the connection between, okay, you're talking about great customer service, but you're providing salt, which is a commodity. So how do you provide great customer service, you know, when you're selling a commodity? Or is it not a commodity?
Think salt is more of a commodity than what people want to admit when it comes down to how it moves, the cost that it accrues as it gets to point A to point B, all the way to the end user perspective.
Walk us through that, because some people just don't. Podcast, I'm gonna play like I'm completely ignorant, and I don't know anything about salt, even though I know that there's a huge salt mine underneath Detroit, and I've never been able to get into yet. But where does I'm gonna ask the most ignorant question again, pretending I don't know anything. Where does salt come from? Is there an unlimited supply of it? Is it everywhere? Can you dig a hole in your backyard and go down 30 feet and hit salt, or is it only in certain places? And like, where does it come from? And then what is that logistical process, you know, to move it from in the ground, wherever it happens to be, to, you know, contractor's truck?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Salt is in a lot of places. It's very abundant underneath the Great Lakes. Basically anywhere the Great Lakes are, is basically a salt bed that's about 1,200 to 2,200 feet below ground.
Okay.
So getting to it is not easy. You know, when they found salt in Detroit many, many years ago, they were mining for other minerals. They just happened to come into salt and said, well, we're in salt. What can we do with it? Let's sell it. Let's try to figure out what it's going to do. So it became one of the most economical ways that they discovered to melt snow and ice. So because of how cheap it was and how abundant it is, we should theoretically never run out of salt in any of our lifetimes based on all the salt that is available for them. It's not just in Michigan or underneath the Great Lakes. It's all over. I mean, New York, upstate New York, there's mines there. There's other salts that are available in our country that are not necessarily below ground. You can grow salt. So if you're in Utah, the Great Salt Lakes. You have water runoff from the mountains. They fill lakes. This water evaporates and you're left with salt crystals. And after a couple of years, you can harvest the salt similar to like you would harvest a crop or a field. You actually take big machines, pull it out of the lake a few feet deep and turn it over, wash it, you dry it, put it into machines if you need to crush it for size, same as you would for mining purposes, and then get it into bags or bulk and get it loaded into trucks and deliver. So really regionally, depending on where you live, that salt type, whether you're west of the Colorado Rockies or just on the eastern side of the mountain range, you're going to be used to having solar salt. If you're in the greater Midwest, you're going to be used to having really dry rock salt from that's produced from, you know, underneath our lake beds. And then if you're from the south, you're going to have other mines from the south that will produce salt, pull it out of the ground, and then put it into trucks, package it, etc. And then there's also salt from all around the world. And when our biggest mining companies in North America, counting Canada, are at capacity, you know, taking care of health and safety for the government and the DOTs, then a lot of companies like myself have to bring salt in from other parts of the world, not just our country, to help support the demand that there is here. In the United States has a huge appetite for salt, especially in the winter. So we need to make sure on the customer service side, we're listening to our customers and our customers are giving us the right feedback for what they're anticipating their needs are going to be for that year. If we communicate just those simple things and understand like, hey, this is where the industry is at, we need to bring in additional salt. We bring those costs together and say, this is what your price is going to be. How many tons do you need for the year on average? What's a good year? What's a bad year? Let's see in between. And we plan for that. So if you commit to me for those tons, I'm going to commit to make sure those tons are on the ground. We don't run out of salt. That's my company's motto. If we commit to saying we're going to have 500 tons on, for you and your company, we're going to have 500 tons on the ground for you and your company.
It's huge.
As the season goes, right, things change. Other markets, like last season was a really good example of this. The Midwest area north of the Ohio River Valley didn't start to get that much snow, but the Ohio River Valley itself got hit early and often, and they had a tremendous winter. And so what happens was a lot of suppliers were pushing their resources south. And then when January, end of January and February came, our winter showed up as it has been recently in the past 5-6 years. And a lot of people were kind of handcuffed. They didn't have enough to support their own backyard clients, which turned into a problem. We made sure again that we didn't oversell ourselves. We made sure our customers had product and product throughout the entire winter. And it's that part of the customer service side that all of a sudden other companies from the Eastern Pennsylvania, New York are reaching out to us, asking us for support and help with materials. And the first thing we do is say, where are all of our customers at? How much product do we have on the ground for them? How much have they purchased? Do we have enough to get through all this for the next few weeks or month? Yes. Okay. Then we can open up and sell to new companies that we typically don't sell to. But first and foremost, our loyal and our repeat customers, our retention customers.
Right. Are you selling to clients throughout the U.S.?
Yes, we do. We're very strong in the Midwest. So, right, Chicago is like our flagship backyard market.
Got it.
We've had support out of, you know, Cincinnati in the past for bulk piles. That market is really hard to gauge because they can go 4 or 5 years without winter. But we're very strong in the packaged de-icers, and we will ship those to our best ability, you know, in a wide range of mileage bands, depending on the need. So we do work with a couple companies out west in Utah to support with bulk road salt. And then when we get out to the East Coast, it's not a big market for us, but we have a couple distributors that are out there that end up coming into Chicago and taking material back with them. So that helps them.
So when it comes to your bag product, we'll talk about the bulk in a minute, but with the bag product, are there different, do you have different types of bag products or do you do custom bagging?
We were talking about doing custom bagging, but then you start to understand that you have too many SKUs.
And
it becomes too complicated. for making sure everyone's materials are going out and turning over, and they might be in different regions or areas and not selling. So we've eliminated any opportunity for that for the time being and just focused on doing what we do well. And we produce a treated de-icer in a bag. We produce, you know, we use other companies for rock salt as well, but it's because that the market was looking for something like that, even though there's 5,000 different de-icing bag products that are out there.
Of course.
We're making what we can make the best so that we can have something out there that can have a 2-3 year shelf life when they don't have a winter. They can go to our bags, pick them up. It's still going to be free flowing in that time frame. So we're just trying to produce a really darn good packaged ice melter.
You know, it's super important. You know,
yeah,
and you expect that in a packaged product, you expect uniformity within some, you know, some relative normalcy within that bag. You're not expecting, you know, 4-inch chunks of concrete, which sometimes we see in our bulk piles, right? Where did all this stuff come from? Why is there a chair leg in here? You know, that kind of stuff. You don't expect that in your bag products. So
bulk is a different animal. I mean, with, you know, trucking, you get things in dump trucks that they might not have cleaned their dump truck bed, and they weren't pulling salt before. They may have loaded the vessel with something else before it got shipped around the Great Lakes. It's just there's a lot of different ways that bulk can get contaminated, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And are you doing anything with liquids at this time or no?
Not as much at the time. Mm-hmm. We found that people producing their own brine seems to be one of the most economical ways to do liquid de-icing solutions. And a lot of that is buying a brining system, and then they would use our high purity salts in order to help produce that brine. So our brine salts or high purity salts don't really leave insoluble matter behind in their brine making machine, so they can keep them running and not have to shut down brine production to clean equipment up. And it's been a really big benefit for those people, those companies, to keep people working and not having to go back and clean out gear, having flow rate problems, getting augers stuck, having to replace parts in the middle of the season, and then parts are 2 weeks out, so they can't even use their brine maker anymore. Having a nice clean salt makes a really big difference.
Huge. 100%.
Yeah.
You know, I've always heard that 90% of all the salt supply in general goes to government, you know, municipalities, you know, state DOTs, things like that. And only 10% is reserved for or available for private contractors. Is that a good ratio in your experience, or does it just vary year to year?
Yeah, I mean, it's because I don't know what those mining companies, you know, what their book of non-government business is. It's hard to say, but we definitely focus on the non-government to help support, you know, the snow fighters, the end users, the resellers that are, you know, needing these materials that definitely can't get them from the mining companies, you know, during the busiest times of the year. And we completely understand the whole perspective for those companies to support and make sure that our highways, roadways are cleared by the government. And that's where they have to focus their energy towards.
Yeah.
So,
no, of
and,
course.
And the contracts that those companies, I'm sorry, those government entities write is that they're going to guarantee that they're going to take those tons. Mm-hmm. A lot of contractors don't want to enter into a contracted situation where they're saying that they're going to take 80% of their tonnage that, you know, they're forecasting. Because it is, right? Like, the government gets to use tax dollars. They can't rely on tax dollars. They have to make sure that they're doing a lot, maybe in the green season, to make sure that they can cash flow and have enough liquidity to pay for their salt if it snows or not. So it's a big challenge out there.
Talk to me a little bit about what you do. I want to get to know you a little bit too, for our listeners, and let them get to know you a little bit. You mentioned skydiving and you mentioned a family. Tell us a little bit about what you do outside of work. And you said you have kids. How old are your kids?
Yeah, I've got a son and a daughter, 8 and 11, and they're pretty awesome. They're both into their own sports and things. And then my wife, being a nurse, mentioned that earlier. She's opened my eyes to travel. So every year we try to go somewhere different that we've never been before. So she's always picking a place with a group of friends and saying, hey, we got to go check out this place. Or, you know, we've done a lot of that. the islands, say the Caribbean areas. And then in the back of our mind is like, can we take our skydiving gear? So whenever we walk onto a plane and we have like our rigs with us, people kind of look at us funny and like, do you guys know something that we don't about this flight? Like, no, happening? No, no. Yeah. So we get weird looks from time to time in that regard. With the onset of kids, there's less and less skydiving. From there, it turns into, you know, fair weather sports like golf or going out on the boat or going out on, you know, the water and going swimming. So there's a lot of time spent in the outdoor world in that regard.
Okay.
But
cool.
Other than that, you know, we're really focused on trying to keep the kids engaged in coachable sports and get them, you know, learning from other people besides mom and dad, because we all know they don't think mom and dad are the coolest people, right?
So. Right. Never. Yeah. Okay, good. Thanks for pulling back the curtain a little bit and showing us a little bit of your personal side. Are you still taking on new clients? Do you still have available material that you can hook someone up with, or is it too late?
Yeah, absolutely. We can do both. We have basically, we set our seasons, you know, July, August, there are a lot of planning and making sure that we've got things in line for supply. And based on prior years and average winters and events, we definitely make sure that we're set up for success to help out new business as well. You know, that's part of your growth. So we are ready or packaged. Bulk is a little bit different of an animal because people kind of hold back on that. So
okay,
it's we're in the season right now. Mm-hmm. It's busy.
Yep. And what's the best way for someone to get a hold of you if they want to track you down and talk about what they need?
Absolutely. The phone call into the company, 630-513-7575. Mm-hmm. And also MidwestSalt.com. They can get online. They can request a quote online and get connected with me or with John. And really, we're handling everything that comes through those doors. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a look at the opportunities. Base the opportunity around supply chain. Where can we get the materials to those companies the best way and at the most economical price, and see if we can be a good fit for them. And we're not always going to be the best fit. And we'll tell them that, you know, based on what they're already currently doing. Mm-hmm. You share with me, we're going to be able to share with you and understand if we can actually do this together, or if they're already being in the best hands already, right? Like, we're going to tell you we believe that you have fair pricing. And that may be even more beneficial for those companies to know, like, they're not getting, you know, what do they call that? The wool pulled over their eyes.
That's right. Yep. Yep.
Or the rug pulled out from underneath them.
Right.
So yeah, we in essence, we become a guide more so in a lot of those conversations and try to make sure that we're explaining things appropriately, and that if they're already in a good spot, that's awesome. But when things hit the fan, you know that you can probably use us as a reserve. We'll help support you in any way that we can.
No, great. Well, we have a few more minutes, so I want to talk just kind of generally about the industry. Midwest Salt's been a great supporter of Snowfighters Institute. You guys have been attending our events and sponsoring us for several years, and it's been a really great relationship getting to know you guys. And I know you're involved in the industry in a lot of different ways. I see Midwest Salt everywhere. So kind of let's talk about just generally maybe let me ask you this question. How would you describe the snow and ice management industry to someone who, you know, maybe a family member or someone you just met on the street? And so kind of like, what's the state of the industry from your perspective?
So I believe, you know, this might be a two-parter, and I apologize if I go on a little bit. to explain it to someone who's not in the industry, like, there's so much that happens behind the scenes, and when people are asleep, that you might be sleeping, and there's people out there moving, clearing snow, ice, making the roads safe, sidewalks safe, so your mother, your grandmother can go to the store that next morning and go get the medicine that she needs, go into these businesses and get the support, go to the doctors, go to church, go to basically anywhere you need to go to get whatever you need. Mm-hmm. And so over time, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, when we would have big snowfalls in Michigan, you'd be out there, you know, slipping and sliding down the road so much. Like, you just got used to driving in those mm-hmm. kind of conditions. You just don't see that anymore as much. And it's rare when it does happen. And there's so much better communication about the conditions of the roads and such that there's so much emphasis into public safety that I guess there's a real big commitment out there to make sure that people are not getting hurt in these conditions and mm-hmm. that they are being protected, whether they want to acknowledge it or not. And those people that are out there doing it are putting in really long hours, working their butts off, and like, never, the only thing that they hear are the negatives.
Right.
My hand railing's got extra quarter inch of snow on it. It's like, we've been out for 12 hours, 14 mm-hmm. hours clearing. And the last thing, you know, they want to hear is a complaint, but obviously everyone's trying to be serviced all at once. And it's a super difficult, thankless industry. And I think that people need to understand, like, these people are putting it out there and they're putting their lives out there to get these things done. And it's not easy, but it's extremely important. It's crucial. It's like a firefighter, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. So. No, I love the perspective and I agree 100%. I mean, it's really changed a lot. I grew up here in Grand Rapids. We average 75 inches of snow. And I remember, yeah, every street was hard pack. Every, you know, you couldn't walk across a parking lot anywhere, whether it was a grocery store or drugstore or whatever it was, without walking on ice and just tiptoeing across the, that was normal. And if you slipped and cracked your head open, it was your fault, you know, and yeah. we just accepted that, but you just don't see yeah. that anymore. So there's been, the standard has gone way up. And maybe there's been some more, okay, there's been some warming. Maybe we don't get the crazy cold winters, but even when we do, the standard has risen and the industry has risen to meet that higher standard. 100%. Yeah. What about some trends? Are you seeing some trends that contractors should be keeping an eye on? Because you're out there talking to a lot of companies and things. Like, what should people be yeah. mindful of right now?
I think the advent of technology and the way that it's being implemented and finding out what people are using in order to be more successful. I mean, there's like the frost cameras at remote sites and such that are out there being used. Just standard, you know, planning contracts. Are they doing seasonals or are they doing by the push? I mean, these companies are really broadening the way that they do work and not just getting like in a one-way street and only doing it one way, the same way all the time. So with warmer, you know, weather, more people are doing brining because they can stretch the salt further and they can apply less salt. And that is a lower impact negatively against the environment. So there's a lot of new things that are, you know, brining's been around for, you know, 15 years at least. People have been doing it for a while, but it's now past that bell curve, the low end of the bell curve, and it's starting to rise and gain a lot more traction. So I think it's staying educated, keeping your ears open, being open to change, honestly, and just listening. We don't always have the right tool in the tool bag to you know, fix everything. So maybe we need to look at new ways to do business. And now with how quickly people want responses and want action or want to be acknowledged, like, technology is helping solve all that with the communication that's available to customers, to, you know, on both sides of the snow industry, from supply to end user and then end user to their clients, you know, customer facing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have answered that question exactly the same way. I think technology is the big trend. And within that, obviously, there's specific technologies that are more critical than others. But man, it takes time to understand how to work those things into your operation. But if you don't make that investment and really learn how to incorporate newer technology, you're going to get left behind. And it's going to be hard to catch up. And that's why I think Snowfighters is so important and peer groups are so important, you know. Understanding what other people have done and learning from them, what works, what doesn't work, what needs improvement. And honestly, the suppliers who are providing those tech solutions, they, you know, they're at the table. They're listening and they're hearing, they're getting, you know, real-time feedback and improving those products very quickly. It's amazing. You mentioned Frost Solutions, you know, one of our other sponsors. I mean, just look at the advancements that have happened with that product just in such a short amount of time based on feedback and just more investment. So 100% echo what you said. I want to wrap up by just asking you if there's been, you're still young in your career from my perspective, but I want to ask you kind of a twofer here. Is there something that you can point to in your career thus far that you're really proud of that comes to mind? And then on the flip side, has there been maybe a challenge or some critical point, I don't want to say crisis, but some defining moment, if you will, that kind of pointed you in a different direction in your career? So those are two very different questions.
No, I agree. It's interesting. I'm not an attaboy, or I don't like to pat myself on the back. But one thing I did when I came back to Midwest Salt in 2016 was I was coming in in the fall, and there was already a sales team assembled for the company. So I knew at that point that they had been through a couple winters without me. I was driving truck, right? I was a different person to them at that time. So when I came in, I needed to re-educate myself. And I think my curiosity about where does all the salt come from, number one, how do I get it to any destination or point, basically, in a tri-state area, I wanted to understand. So I wanted to educate. And I think that's one of the things that keeps me going is my curiosity about how things work. And so to say, like, am I proud of that? I think that knowledge and that historical information has made me stronger as being more of a guide and more of one of those people that you can go to and just ask a general question. I'll be able to help at least point you in the right direction of where to go look for something. Mm-hmm. Something I'm proud of. Yeah, I don't know. It's just something I know now, right? Uh-huh. It's tacit knowledge.
Sure. Right.
But one of the hurdles that helped, get me to where I'm at now would be writing bad contracts. I made two big mistakes in my career that cost me in the bottom line, and I let my team down one time. You know, not in a major way. I wasn't taking food off the table, but it was a contract that I miswrote one of the sections about terms and conditions about getting into or getting out of a contract. Mm-hmm. And it was something I completely overlooked. And I learned a lot from that. And now I'm one of the main guys on the team that handles all the government contracts and such, because I've made the mistake. I learned from those lessons, and now I'm way better at making sure, like, we're writing contracts that are going to be fair to both companies. It's not just going to fall into my favor if something goes wrong. We're going to work at coming up with a solution to help benefit both parties to make sure that we can move forward and equitably come out of this, reasonably unscathed. Mm-hmm. So it just takes time, and making mistakes is probably the best thing you can do in any business, as long as you're not
the
same ones over and over again.
It's the best way to learn. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're out there, you're involved in the industry, you're showing up different places. Where might someone bump into you? Where are you traveling to next?
Yeah. So next up, I just got back from Wisconsin, but next up is the big show for us in the backyard for Illinois is iLandscape. And that, I believe, is the end of January or early February coming up this next year. Okay. We did move it out a little bit later in the season, so it wasn't in the heart of the season this past year. But we're in the same location every year. We give out free beer at lunch, FYI.
Oh, so you better be there and show. All right.
So,
nice. Yep.
And that's where I tend to always make sure I'm always at that show. And then I'm in Wisconsin a couple few times for a couple conferences up there. And then when SIMA is close enough for me to make and we don't have overlap, I'll go to those sessions as well. Obviously, for Snow Fighters, if people are a part of the Snow Fighters Institute or coming out to be a part of any of their events, our information is available. I'm going to make myself available to a few of these events as well as we go on here in the fall, because having a digital platform makes it so easy to be in the area or in front of these people at the same time. So
for sure,
as much as I can put out there, we definitely will.
Yeah, good. That's great. Thank you, Jason, for stopping by Snow Fighters Institute. It's great to catch up with you and hear what's going on with Midwest Salt. And again, we appreciate your support. I'm going to give you the last word. Is there anything yet that we didn't talk about that you were hoping to chat about?
Be smart, communicate with your suppliers, try to be as truthful as possible, and just be open to learning. That's it.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you again, Jason.
Thank you, Phil. Have a great day, man.
You too.
Thanks for listening to the Snow Fighters Institute podcast. Subscribe so you don't miss future episodes, and check out our upcoming events at snowfightersinstitute.com.